The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Wednesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to try to get you to prevent making any cardinal sins on your Final Four wagers this weekend. Yeah, the movie Angels in the Outfield was worthy of some Rotten Tomatoes, but the reality this summer could be worth an Oscar. And when we get to Money Time today, we're going to tell you why a particular setting has us very bullish on a Wednesday night investment.
First take on a Wednesday, Dave. What'd you see that you want to share with our viewing audience from last night or maybe something else in the world that intrigued you?
Let's go back to a theme that we've talked about before, and it's getting very interesting now. Memphis Grizzlies played some really good basketball without Zach Randolph. He comes back. You think, okay, this should be an upgrade now. Now maybe a chance to move up, get a home court advantage in the Western Conference playoffs. The first five games with him in the starting lineup, 1-4 straight up, 0-5 against the spread, and the only straight-up win, an ugly close win over a terrible Washington team. So what do? They pull him out of the starting lineup. What happens? 2-0 straight up, 2-0 against the spread. Last night that we watched real closely, we found out Marc Gasol wasn't going to play. So now you're forced to start Randolph again, right? No, even with Gasol out, they didn't start Randolph. He only played 22 minutes, 8 points, 5 rebounds, just a middling performance as a reserve. Look at the guys who did play. Dante Cunningham, he has a double-double. Maurice Spates, he starts at center. He has a big game last night. They're actually playing better team basketball without Randolph. So now the problem going forward, and why we'll watch so closely, how long will he accept that lesser role coming off the bench? That hasn't been his way in the past. He's been a troublemaker just about anywhere that he's been. We're going to watch Memphis real, real closely. They're playing better without him. Let's see if he upsets that apple cart. Okay, baseball started a few hours ago.
Yes.
Were you up watching?
I was not.
But you're going to talk about it anyway.
We have to talk about it. The fact that I wasn't up watching. I know we mentioned it a little bit on yesterday's show, but, you know, this is a classic. Well, I think we can start to call them Seeligisms now because Bud Selig has made enough interesting decisions to piss off baseball fans across the world throughout the course of his seemingly endless tenure as MLB commissioner, and this one's just stupid. Here we have the A's and the Mariners, okay? I admit, neither one's going to be a playoff team. When we get to the AL West today, we'll explain why neither one likes to be a playoff team, but nonetheless, A's and the Mariners in a meaningful game, you know, they get a two-game set in Tokyo that starts 3:10 a.m. local time in Oakland and Seattle. Dave, you turned on MLB Network this morning. Scores tied 1-1 in the ninth. Was the game on MLB Network?
You said piss off, and your mother's in the audience.
She's heard the word before.
She's heard the word?
I think.
Probably has used it, you know, I would think. I thought that was the network it was supposed to be on. So I get up thinking, okay, tie game late. We're going to turn it on. No, there's some sort of rerun on there. So I'm not even sure what network it was on anyway. I thought MLB TV, maybe it's strictly the online version. But when I went to turn it on, didn't even see the ending.
So, we have a game that starts at 3:10 a.m. local time. You can't find it on any of the networks, even if you want to watch it. And, of course, what happened wasn't good baseball. You know, these two teams still have five more exhibition games to play once they get back to the U.S. Following tonight / tomorrow morning's early start game. And what we see, you know, Oakland goes 1-for-14 with runners in scoring position. Oh, maybe the A's are in midseason form right now. Bottom line, not a good idea. Bad idea. to start your season a week early in a foreign country at a time that no one can watch. You wonder why baseball has issues moving forward. We try to project 10, 20, 30 years from now for their fan base. This is why. Another Sealingism.
But a good idea if it's Seattle-Oakland, because we're going to talk about, of course, the AL West in the second segment today. But, yeah, if you've got to bury a game, and you don't have to be so funny if you're Japanese fans. Because you're used to playing this fundamental game without a lot of power, and you think, Ichiro Suzuki is batting third. Coco Crisp is batting third. This is a Japanese leg game, not a Major League Baseball game. How can those two guys have been batting third in their orders? Talk about that in segment two.
Absolutely. But for today, we have to start with what we've gotten a flurry of emails on. In fact, no single topic has generated more mail for us this season than what to do with Louisville futures tickets this week. So that becomes a prime topic for the Market Watch segment of today's show. We've had a high volume of emails to sort through. Let's take this one from Aram as one that lays the position out very succinctly so that Dave and I can break it down. Okay, Aram says, let me be real specific here. I have a future bet on Louisville, 50 to win 1,650 to win the tournament. I already blown $200 trying to hedge it last weekend. With Kentucky at minus 485 on the money line for this weekend's game, how can I properly hedge it to where I at least recoup my $200 from lost hedges and my $50 original investment? I've worked out several scenarios, and I come up with no good answers. In many of these scenarios, I'm actually losing money on what's been a great bet. Unreal. Please advise if anything can be done. Well, Dave, there's a couple of different options that we have to recommend for Aram and the other listeners that and viewers that wrote in about this question. You want to start?
Well, first, there are not necessarily any great options because of who they play. Of course, on Saturday, they're going up against Kentucky, the Kentucky money line being kind of prohibitive. Several things come into play here, though. Talk about the general concept of hedging. We've done this for special topics in the past. We said at the start of the tournament, you can buy some of these teams with the notion of hedging in mind later on. First question is, do you need to hedge? So we teased about the idea of a cardinal sin at the start of the show. If you don't need to hedge, then you don't. The fact that you could have some of these people talk saying they've got Louisville plus 40 to 1 or better in their pockets, that's a good bet. Because you can't find better than 8 to 1 out there anywhere right now. Now, maybe you've already tied up a little bit of some losing tickets that have reduced that 40 to 1 down, but do you need to hedge from a personal standpoint? It's April 1st next week. You got rent coming. You got bills you have to pay. Do you have to do something to consolidate that ticket? If so, we'll explore those strategies. But if you don't need to hedge it and you're sitting on a 40 to 1, your best option this weekend, I mean, spend a few bucks, go buy a Louisville jersey or a pennant, put it on Saturday, root for Louisville. Because that 40 to 1, imagine if you walked into a sports book right now. How much would you bet on Louisville if 40 to 1 was on the board up there? You'd bet it pretty good. Probably more than you already have bet it because you'd be able to see that edge. So if you don't need to hedge, your best option, maybe just to ride it out. But if you do need to hedge, that's some possibility.
Sure. And this is the one scenario that I think makes the most sense, at least from my perspective. All right. You want to hedge, lock in some kind of a profit. What I would do, you can find Kentucky in the minus 150 range right now to win the whole tournament. You do have to shop to find that price. That price isn't everywhere. Some places it's as high as minus $2 for the Wildcats to win it all. But if you shop around, you should be able to find a minus 150 on Kentucky to win it all. So, put a couple of units on that. Then, if Kentucky wins and knocks off Louisville, you're going to get a nice plus price on whoever wins the Ohio State-Kansas game, and you can put a few shekels, a couple of units, on that when it comes to Monday night's affair. So you'll have Kentucky in your pocket, you'll have Louisville in your pocket, and you'll have whoever wins Ohio State-Kansas game in your pocket, meaning that however it plays out, you can walk away with something. You're not going to get rich using that strategy. You're not going to get the same type of profits that you would if you let the Louisville at 40-1 or 33-1 or 50-1 or whatever you got Louisville at to ride, but you will make something regardless of who wins. So that's my, you know, if you want to make sure that you're walking away with something, that would be how I would do it. Something on Kentucky to win it all, and then the money line on whoever Kentucky's playing, because again, Kentucky's going to be a significant favorite in that game, and you won't have to put as much on that dog on Monday night. They will be favored by margin over both Ohio State or Kansas.
So we go back to one of the original premises on this very concept. If you're going to win in the long run, it means you want every bet that you make to be a bet that has a positive expectation. If you need to hedge, if you've got to get out somehow this weekend, then you follow those strategies. But what you've got to do in the back of your mind, if I make this Kentucky bet, is that a good bet in and of itself? Because when all the counting's done at the end of the year, you're weighing all the good bets and all the bad bets that you made, and you're hoping you have an edge that comes out on top of it. Our idea is, okay, if you're sitting with that big Louisville ticket, any bet you make has to be a positive expectation. So do you bet Kentucky? Yeah, if you like Kentucky, if you think it brings value. But if you're forced to lay Kentucky at maybe 10 or 15 cents the worst of it, if you're not getting a positive expectation, then you are better off just riding out that Louisville position. Yeah, you hate to take a bet that big, have it stay in existence this long, and not get anything out of it. But if you look at what the Louisville price is right now, and look at what you've got in your pocket, you made a good bet. Sometimes you're going to have a 50-1 horse that's going to come in fourth. That happens. Not all good bets will cash. Louisville was a good value bet. If you don't have to hedge it, you might not want to, but make sure any hedging is only at a positive expectation.
So great question, Airman. Thank you for all of you who sent in those emails asking us to give strategy on what to do in this scenario. You have questions you want to ask? We'll answer as many as we can on air. The address, of course, is sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter, @VegasSportsDay, and you can make your voice heard in the community. Lots of active threads and discussions going right now, covers.com/posting.
Okay, if you are among the few that watched Seattle play Oakland, that's not a preview of the American League West this summer. There's something really, really good going on in that division, and we're going to start with that after the break. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from... can't think of the name on my damn show. Golf and other four-letter words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
It's AL West preview time. Over the last couple of days, we've already gone through the AL East and the AL Central. We're going to use the same format here for the AL West. So with the chart you're about to see, going to show, or the chart that you're seeing right now, is showing the win totals from last year and the odds to win the division this year. Of course, Texas won 95 games, went to Game 7 of the World Series, and lost. They're +115 to win the division in 2012. The Angels are the favorite, even though they finished 9 games behind Texas in the standings last year. They are -110 to win the division. Oakland, the A's, won 74 games a year ago. They're 30-1 to win the AL West this year. And frankly, you know, true odds, more like 100-1. Seattle, I don't even know if 100-1 is real. Won 67 games last year, and they are 35-1 to come out of the AL West. It would take some really ugly things happening to Texas or L.A. for either the A's or the Mariners to be in serious contention in this division in September.
Yeah, this is going to be fabulous to watch. Now, if you look at those numbers, there is a slight temptation. There's a way to balance out the Angels and the Rangers to where you get this tiny, tiny plus price that one of those two will win the division. It's not a big return on your investment, but it's better than you're going to get from a CD over 6 months. because there is just a huge gap. Seattle and Oakland are not going to win this division. Could probably make an over-under bet if someone would offer it to you that the second-place team in the AL West will finish perhaps 20 games ahead of the third-place team in that division. The gap really is that wide. It's going to be fascinating to watch at the top, though. Rangers and Angels, a dynamite race. One that's going to be fascinating, though, because there's a different pressure this year. With the new wild card format, there are six A-level teams in the American League. One of them is not going to make the playoffs. In fact, we can almost make the case with the injuries that the Phillies have, there may be six teams in the American League better than any National League team. You take the three teams out of the East, the Tigers, and these two at the top. So there is that added pressure where, yeah, if you're the Rangers, you don't have to beat the Angels, but you may have to beat the Rays or the Red Sox. We'll start with the Rangers, who were marvelous to watch again last year. If you look at the runs that they scored, despite having key injuries to so many people in their lineup, they're going to score again this year. They're going to play hard again this year. But where we have our first issue is it's a solid five-man rotation in terms of guys going out there and working innings. But is there an upside? Yeah, if we compare them to the Angels, talk about Colby Lewis is probably going to get the opening day start. Matt Harrison, these are two guys who are going to be good journeymen. They'll eat innings. We don't know about the upside. Darvish, big question mark. Neftali Feliz, he's a question mark. Where we start with the Rangers, is that starting rotation, can the consistency be there, and is there an upside? Can any of them jump up and win 18 games or more?
You know, I mean, Texas was the fourth most profitable team in baseball to support last year, behind Detroit, Milwaukee, and Arizona. They finished plus 187 in runs. Only the Yankees and the Phillies were better in that department. 85 and 68 to the over, despite having a good pitching staff. That has to do with scoring 855 runs, the third most in baseball behind New York and Boston. They were a great team to lay a run and a half with a season ago. Plus 3290 in terms of units. With laying run and a half or taking run and a half. 77 of their 96 wins came by more than one run. Just to clarify from yesterday, when I said the Royals were the best team, the Royals had the most, when it comes to run line, Royals had the most run line wins. Texas had the most run line profit. But there's absolutely nothing for this team to prove in the regular season. Yes, they have to make the postseason. But, you know, there's nothing to prove until... let's see, they win three games and have two outs and two strikes in the ninth inning or the tenth inning in the World Series. I mean, that's how close Texas came a year ago. Obviously, it got away from them in both the ninth and the tenth and the 11th innings in Game 6 at St. Louis. And when you're coming off back-to-back World Series losses, there's something deflating about that when you're looking in April and say, hey, we got to start grinding out wins again. I'm not sure when it comes to a season win total perspective, I'd be interested in Texas going over the total for that reason alone. Closer issues in Texas as well this year. Now look, I trust Nolan Ryan. I trust the pitching coach Mike Maddux as much as I trust any duo in baseball when it comes to getting the most out of pitchers with questionable stuff or questionable stats. You know, Joe Nathan missed 2010. He quickly pitched his way out of the closer's role in 2011 with a 63-win team. He had a spring ERA 1800 or of 18. I've got my concerns about Nathan, and one thing you don't want from a top-notch team is those blown saves late. You know, they do have Mike Adams. They do have Alexi Ogando as potential replacements if Nathan falters, but I have a hard time trusting Joe Nathan right about now.
If you haven't had your fantasy draft yet for this year, most of you already have. Mike Adams, who probably could be the closer a month into the season. Keeping in mind, Nathan is 37 years old. In the Texas heat, there's no guarantee he gets every one of those calls. Let's talk about the difference between the Angels and Texas right at the very top. You talk about a perfect storm coming into play. Look at the first four in this Angel pitching rotation. Not only guys that are very good, but guys that are very durable. You could get 900 innings or more out of those first four at all-star level. But now here's a little added element. These guys give up a lot of fly balls. Look at this Angel outfield. Last year when they finally decided Bourgeois is going to play center field, let's move Vernon Wells to left, Torrey Hunter to right. Again, now some of these are difficult to chart because they're not exact, but according to Baseball Prospectus, which we respect their tables on this, that Angel outfield prevented 38 runs last year, by far the best in baseball. Now, you look at the ballparks they play in. Outside of these division road games at Texas, you know, you got road games at Seattle, road games at Oakland, home games in a good pitcher's park. Those first four with that outfield means a lot of a comfort zone for the pitcher. You can work high in the strike zone, which most of those guys will do. And you can get away with it because they will track the ball down. Angels have a chance to be very dynamic with the first four. Jerome Williams, a bit of a wild card at five. But if your first four are that good, and you can make a case one-on-one, each of their first four beats the Texas first four. Remember, C.J. Wilson, probably going to be the number four starter for the Angels. He would have been starting on opening day for the Rangers.
Yeah, and this L.A. team, remarkably consistent last year. You bet them in all 81 home games, you came away with one unit of profit. You bet them in all 81 road games, you came away with one unit of profit. Obviously, that you're not going to dismiss a team that produced profitable results, but you didn't make a lot of money backing L.A. A season ago. And, you know, this is a team that ruled the AL West, you know, a six-year stretch where they were in the postseason again and again, not the last 2 years. And obviously, the first time they've gone a two-year stretch without making the postseason since Artie Moreno took over as owner. And obviously, we know what they did in the offseason. Fired the staff, brought in a new GM, signed Albert Pujols, signed C.J. Wilson, the two biggest, you know, the biggest hitter and the biggest pitcher that were out there. So, obviously, this team's looking to spend money, looking to win right now. And you can see that from, here's this quote from Torrey Hunter. It's pretty awesome. This is the best team I've been a part of my whole career, just looking at it numbers-wise. Right now, it's just about being healthy. This is definitely my best shot. I'm all in. So we can contrast that with the kind of attitude that I'm concerned about for the Rangers right now, and understand why the Angels are favored in this division, even though obviously they finished nine games behind Texas in the standings a year ago. There are some concerns. Remember, Texas has outscored L.A. by 307 combined runs over the last year. There's been a big difference in offensive efficiency that you can't just blame on the two ballparks these teams play in. But when we look at question marks for L.A., and boy, that starting staff, as Dave mentioned, as good or better than any in baseball, period. No debate, no question. They are dominant. But, you know, they blew 25 saves in 2011. That was tied for third worst in the majors, tied for second worst in the American League. The closer, Jordan Walden, his rookie season, blew 10 by himself. They got to close out games this year. And the one thing that the Angels did not spend a lot of money on in this past offseason was revamping that bullpen. Just something to be aware of.
The most interesting development early in the season, and for some of you fantasy guys, worth following. Yeah, there's an experiment with Mark Trumbo playing third base. Yes, he's awful at that position. But Mike Socha is a pretty sharp guy. And you know what Socha probably realizes? When you've got Weaver, Herrera, or Santana pitching, there aren't many ground balls to third base. Maybe you can't play Trumbo there when C.J. Wilson is on the mound. But for most of their innings at the start, of course, you know, late game you can replace his glove. But for most of their starters, you know, Jared Weaver's just not giving up ground balls to third. Danny Herrera, no ground balls to third. They might be able to hide a terrible glove to get one more bat in the lineup. So when we talk about that offensive gap between the Angels and the Rangers, when you add Pujols, possibly get Trumbo in the lineup, and look at how good Kendrick Morales looks from a health standpoint. If he's healthy, yeah, this could be a very, very dynamic year to watch the Angels. Problem is, a lot of the Angel games when we're watching, they're going to be against Oakland and Seattle. And we can almost lump these two teams as an entry. Think about this opening day. You're Seattle. Big start to the season. And the first batter you send out for the first pitch, Joan Figgins. Arguably the worst offensive player in baseball the last two seasons combined. He's your leadoff guy. You're doing that because you moved Ichiro down to the number three slot. An alarming lack of power to have at number three. Yeah, he got four hits, you know, last night against Oakland. Or this morning against Oakland, all singles. You're just not going to get the punch out of that position. So where's the upside for Seattle? Well, there's a lot of good young talent. So there's a chemistry thing that's liable to happen with them. Good young talent that will play hard. Hopefully you get the fans behind them. And you do have a starting rotation at the top, Hernandez and Vargas, that's fine. The problem is after Hernandez and Vargas, it falls off the table, as does the offense. It's another long season for fans in Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, the Mariners have been the worst road team in baseball over the last 2 years. A season ago, 28 road wins, fewest in the American League. Only the Astros had fewer in baseball. Stats are going to show 30, but remember that series against the now Miami Marlins that was moved to Seattle because of the U2 concert? Well, those count as road wins in the standings, but if you paid attention, it's really only 28 road wins for Seattle because they played those three games, that series against the Marlins, at home. Only the Astros cost their backers more money on the highway. The 556 runs that Seattle scored for the entire season last year, it's hard to make the Giants and the Padres' offenses look good. Seattle did. They had more than 60 runs less than those two squad, and or than the Twins even, who were the second lowest team in the American League. And that equaled only 70 over bets in 162 games. There could still be value betting Seattle under the total on a game-in, game-out basis this season. And again, you know, 95 losses last year. They had a positive spring, but the bottom line, this is a team with question marks everywhere. This is a team with a considerable lack of punch, as Dave talked about. Nothing behind the front two in the order. Bullpen is still a big issue. There's some young talent at the AAA level. We may see guys like Erasmo Ramirez, or Danny Hulson, or James Paxton, or Taiwan Walker, all of whom have upside at the minor league level and could get call-ups at some point this season. Big turnover in the bullpen. The bullpen should be a little bit better this year, but you're not going to, I don't think you're going to make money betting Seattle. I'm not sure who's going to bet the Mariners on a consistent basis. So even in baseball, and baseball's different when it comes to run line, money line versus point spreads. In football or basketball, a team gets so bad, they'll reach a point, hey, they're 20-point dogs in this game. They're 25-point dogs in this game. And even though they're miserable, you can still find a way to cover a point spread with a very bad team when the market gets to the level, all right, we're going to give them more and more points. Baseball's about money lines. You can't win your bet on teams when they don't win games, and it doesn't matter what kind of a price you're getting. It's not like taking a dog from a $2 dog to a $3 dog to a $4 dog is going to earn you a profit in MLB if the team can't win games, whereas that can and does happen in the other major sports.
At some point in the future, there may be a voters' referendum in San Jose about whether Oakland moves in. There's a ballpark option on the table. They've been paying on an option on some land they can move into. So you live in San Jose, and you're all excited, and you decide you're going to step and watch last. You say, okay, the number three hitter is Coco Crisp. The cleanup hitter is Seth Smith. That's an intra-squad game in spring training for some other teams. Number three and number four, guys who not only don't fit those particular spots in the lineup, guys who aren't going to make any other lineups. So not only is Coco Crisp making your lineup, he's batting third. Seth Smith, how many other lineups does he even make? But now it gets even worse tonight. Your second game of the season, and you're sending Bartolo Colon out there on the mound to start that. That shows you how bad things are in Oakland, where there's just not a whole lot of upside. So what we're going to have to do with Oakland and Seattle both is watch closely over the course of the season. Here would be a good over-under bet. How many number four and number five starters, how many different guys will appear in that role for Seattle this year? That over-under might be like eight and a half different guys are going to be out there. Bartolo Colon for Oakland, Kevin Millwood for Seattle. Chances of them still pitching for these teams after the trade deadline this year, not very good. So these will be works in progress teams that we will find ways to do things with over the course of the summer. But that little notion, Angels minus 10, Rangers plus 15, we can scrape a couple of pennies in the middle and box the other two teams out of the AL West. If you're sitting on a nice pile of cash, that's actually not a bad bet to make for the next 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned the A's' remarkable run to the over post-All-Star break last year, 25-2 with four pushes to the over. Line shoppers could have gone 29-2 in their first 31 games post-break, and that's how they ended up being an over team for the year, despite the fact they scored only 645 runs. That was third worst in the American League. They entered the season this year. Let's see. Where do you need good power players? First base, third base. The A's got nothing on the corners. They're looking at platoons at both first and third. Our center fielder can do something. Well, they bring in the Cuban rookie who's never played an inning in the U.S. in either the minors or the majors. He's, all right, you're going to be our center fielder. You look at the back end of this rotation. Dave mentioned it with the Seattle guys. Tommy Malone, Tyson Ross, Graham Godfrey. If you've never heard of the three, you're probably not alone. All three have very limited major league experience. You know, Grant Balfour is supposed to be closing out this year. He hasn't been the closer before. He had a good ERA and batting average against last year, but switching roles. Yeah, Billy Beane and his movie got an Oscar nomination. Billy Beane in Practicality since the big money talent left Oakland back in, what, 2003 or 2004? This has been a contender for last place just about every year, just like they will be again in 2012.
Okay, we probably haven't whetted your appetites to stay up real late and watch Oakland play Seattle. But there's some stuff you do want to watch on tonight's NBA Hardwoods. Money Time is coming up.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
So as Dave alluded a few moments ago, yeah, my mom's in the studio audience
today. So no mama today?
And for my mom, I have to give her a special extra rowdy money time!
She must be so proud. So proud.
That's her happy moment. She laughed. It was good. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start tonight in Madison Square Garden, where the Orlando Magic taking money -2 against the New York Knickerbockers. And, you know, the Knicks gutted out a win on Monday against Milwaukee. They got the Bucks in a bad spot playing what their fifth and sixth nights. Or no, that was fourth and five nights at that point. And then they played fifth and sixth last night. But the bottom line, they were without Amari Stoudemire. They were without Linsanity, Jeremy Lin. And it was a prime example of how to win ugly in the NBA. We saw Baron Davis replace Jeremy Lin. 3 of 12 shooting, 9 turnovers. That's the Baron Davis we know and love in close to 34 minutes of floor time. Carmelo tweaked his groin injury. There were question marks about whether he was going to play tonight, but the quote I read said, I got to take the team on my back tonight. So I would expect to see Carmelo this evening. Davis expected to start again tonight, and Amari now out, quote-unquote, indefinitely with a back injury that may well require surgery in the offseason. Now, Jared Jeffries also out, so the Amari loss magnified. The guy the Knicks would love to replace him isn't going to be able to suit up. That's going to tax their depth. But as Dave's about to show you and tell you, on balance, with Amari Stoudemire out of the lineup, it might not necessarily be a bad thing for the Knicks if the others are healthy.
We do need to set perspective here. Amari Stoudemire is a star, and he's very talented, but not a superstar. Stars are guys that do some things very, very well. Superstars are guys who tend to do everything well. I remember a big part of what we saw from Amari Stoudemire through his career was Steve Nash, who we talked about on yesterday's show. That was that perfect pick-and-roll combination of Nash driving Stoudemire's numbers into a special stratosphere. But you know what's interesting this year? It's not the first game tonight that he's going to have missed. He's been out several games. And also does not play the whole 48 when he does. When we take a look at Amari Stoudemire's numbers for this year, it's a fascinating breakdown. Okay, when he started 19-24, the Knicks a losing team, when he hasn't played, how about 6-1 the other way? Now it gets even more dramatic. Points per 100 possessions. See a little bit of a difference here. The Knicks actually have scored better, 5.7 better, when he's been off the court. But now look at the defense on points per 100 possessions. 7.1 points per 100 better. But take that 93.3 and now frame that. The best defense in the NBA all season in this category is at 94.5, which means that when Stoudemire hasn't played, this has been the best defense in the NBA. Okay, we don't want to stretch that too far. Small sample size. Because again, the time he's out, this is depending on who you're playing at that particular time. But when you see that number, it shows you just how ineffective he's been as a defender. And that's pretty much been the story his whole career. So in the Knick offense, without Mike D'Antoni running it the way he wanted to run it, he's not that big of a deal right now. Defensively, they are better without him. Remember Tyson Chandler up front, one of the best defensive number fives in the NBA. If Jared Jeffries were healthy, we would have no qualms at all about saying, okay, good riddance to Stoudemire. This team will have a nice chemistry. But this does put a whole different perspective into play, keeping in mind the way they're playing under Mike Woodson. Only twice in 8 games as the opposition scored more than 90 points. This team is D-ing up right now, and the fact that Stoudemire is out, that doesn't change that defense.
For Orlando, it's only the second game in 5 nights, so they're relatively fresh, rested, and ready for their trip to the Garden. And they're off an easy 16-point win against Toronto on Monday, and they're off again tomorrow. So there are no roster limitations or fatigue issues that Stan Van Gundy has to deal with this evening. Since then, we went on and on about it on the show, that embarrassing 85-59 home loss against the Bulls without Derrick Rose. Orlando now 3-0 straight up, 3-0 against the spread. That may have served as something of a wake-up call for that team. And boy, when that three-point shooting is going, the Magic are a very difficult team to beat. They knocked down 17 of 35 triples to win here 102-93 back in January. That was pre-Lynn, that was pre-Woodson. But worth noting, Dwight Howard held to just 8 points in that game in close to 38 minutes of game time by Tyson Chandler.
Let's move on to Atlanta, where we've got Chicago, a 4-point favorite. Maybe a good setting here to take advantage of this NBA condensed schedule. Hawks look a little bit vulnerable tonight. It's going to be their 4th game in 5 nights, all with court changes, but all games took a lot out of them. You can start the sequence at Washington on Saturday, where they trailed by double figures in the 4th quarter, rallied to win the game. That can be very draining for a team. The next night, they played Utah, and again, it seems like it just finished a few minutes ago. 4 overtimes, extremely draining. So what happens last night in Milwaukee? They've got the lead in the 4th quarter, ran out of gas. The Bucks scored 30 in the 4th. It almost looked like traffic cones on defense for the Hawks in the 4th quarter. The Bucks could just go right around them to the basket. For the full game, Milwaukee shot 50%. So if you're already that gassed and you've got to travel one more time and you had multiple starters go more than 37 minutes last night, yeah, it's tough to return home, but even tougher because tonight you might be in the wrong place at the wrong time for what Chicago may bring.
Yeah, and in fact, 5 games in 6 nights for Atlanta, because before this set of back-to-backs, they played the back-to-back-to-back set, and the last of which was that game against the Jazz that went 4 overtimes. Before that set, they also had a set of back-to-backs, which included an overtime game. It has been a brutal stretch of schedule for Larry Drew and the Atlanta Hawks, and the setting couldn't be any more different when you compare it to what Chicago's looking at tonight. This is only their 3rd game in 7 days, and the first game since a really ugly no-show on Monday at home against Denver, a game where they were just run out of the gym by the Nuggets. 108-91 defeat for Chicago in that ball game, and they were outclassed so badly and so out of it that the only guys to get more than 30 minutes were Lou Alding and C.J. Watson. Tom Thibodeau emptied the bench early on that particular evening. Now, the question is, can we expect Thibodeau and a team to play with pride off the loss? We talked about this with Miami earlier in the week, and the Heat, not so much. They're kind of wearing down and not showing that same level of intensity. Now, that doesn't look like they're going to be able to catch Chicago for that number one seed in the East. But the Bulls, well, they brought pretty darn good focus off of every loss. In fact, it's been 83 games since Chicago has lost back-to-back contest. And you look at the numbers. Since the All-Star break back in 2011, 13-0 straight up, 10-3 against the spread coming off a loss, and 2 of those 3 point spread losses have come in the role of double-digit favorites against weaker opposition. So that's pretty good. And when you're talking about the 10-0 straight up and two of the three ATS failures as big game chalking games they had in command, yeah, Chicago, I think we might do something with them.
We should bet this.
I think we might. What do you say?
Let's bet it.
Okay. Play of the day time for Wednesday. We're going to take the Chicago Bulls. We saw some early Chicago money. We've seen some later Atlanta money. You can find the Bulls at -4 right now against the Hawks. I think that's a bargain. So does Dave. Hence, Chicago -4 as the Vegas Sports Day play of the day. And that's going to wrap it up for the Wednesday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll see you again tomorrow.